Everything's against me and it's got me down. If I jumped in the river, I would probably drown. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive. These shabby shoes I'm wearing all the time, they're full of holes and nails. Brother, if I stepped on a worn-out dime, I bet a nickel I could tell you if it was head or tail.
Lemon face. Lemon face. All right.
Dude, that's fucking crazy.
Look, the Terrence Howard has lost his mind arc is reaching its culmination.
We got him currently, and then there's Baldwin. Which one is it? I get them confused.
Stephen Baldwin?
Oh, yeah. His Instagram that you sent.
Yeah.
The fucking, he's fantastic.
This new stuff that...
Is he on fentanyl or what?
Something.
He's got to be on something, right?
Yeah.
The new Terrence Howard stuff, the Joe Rogan, is like peak. But he had a lecture that he did at like Harvard a couple years ago that is equally as nutty, where he's talking about like opening the flower of life and all this stuff. It's unhinged and it's amazing.
Well, like he invented the flower of life, dude. He invented the entire mythos, dude.
Yeah, he opened it.
He's a modern-day myth maker.
He's
dude.
All, I looked at Wikipedia. I want to do a lecture at Harvard.
Well, speaking of opening the flower of life.
And Wikipedia.
Welcome to the Who Goes There podcast, episode 416. This is Jorge.
This is Jacob.
This is Rhett.
Oh, we're back at it, gentlemen.
Yeah. Yeah, we're back at it. And this is Rhett, not Ree. Ree is going... I am officially
retiring.
Psych. Yeah, I should not say my name on here ever, actually, but
never say your full name.
It's too late.
Yeah, for all that.
Yeah.
So how you been?
I've been you go.
I've been good. I watched Furiosa and I got it out of my system. That was just like a 2 week build up, you know, and you were
edging yourself.
I was edging myself for 2 weeks leading up. I was like, I don't want to watch anything. I don't want to do anything. I'm just going to wait. No, I didn't. But that's how I felt mentally. And now it came and went and I'm happy. And that's literally just been just work and waiting for Furiosa.
And we can talk about
We'll talk about it.
Spy Kids 3D.
Aww.
Hey now.
No.
Yes, hey now.
Yes,
you're an all-star. Get your game on. Go play.
That's good. That's a good song. That's not that bad. And who cares? I mean, who gives a fuck what I think? I'm not George Miller. I didn't do Happy Feet 1 and 2. And...
Babe.
Pig City.
Yeah.
And fucking that one with the genie and Tilda Swinton.
Oh, yeah.
That's recent. 10,000 years of...
Longing.
Of longing.
Yeah.
I've been, as you guys know, super, super busy with school.
You've been cucked by school.
I've been liking school, but not cucked. I wouldn't say cucked. Well, I've been fucked by school.
Well, cucked, you enjoy it.
I don't enjoy cucking. I enjoy fucking. So I've been fucked by school.
Oh, gotcha.
You know what I mean? Okay. It's completely fucked me. I'm losing the thread a little bit.
Yeah.
I have one more final to submit by midnight this evening. It's the last thing on an essay.
But what are you doing here, dude?
What do you mean?
Go submit that shit.
I got it. I got everything all planned out. We're good. Yeah, I'm not going to fucking... I already, rescheduled from earlier this week. I appreciate the flexibility. I, too, saw Furiosa. Saw another thing in theaters, but we'll talk about that shortly. But, Sophia and I, the week after this, I'm going on vacation. We're going to go to New Mexico.
Well, that's right. You guys are going to Taos?
Yes. We're going to... Is it Taos? And we're going right outside Carlsbad Caverns. We got a cabin there, and then we're going to go to Roswell... And we're gonna do
make sure
all
you bring us some kitschy stuff back from Area 51.
Yeah. Please. They don't have any of that there. They don't have any kind of kitschy stuff there. I'm sure it's not. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
I know that whole town is like fucking.
Are you close?
Yeah, they don't fuck with anything kitschy there.
Yeah. Are you close to the fucking Oppenheimer?
That's about 5 hours away.
Oh, yeah, it's a rough trip.
Yeah, okay. Carlsbad Caverns and Roswell are about an hour away from each other, which is fucking dope.
Much more doable.
Yeah. But nonetheless, we've talked about going and, getting more cancer. You know what I mean? Coming a downwinder, going to hang out with the Indians, getting some
Get some glass.
Yeah, yeah.
Chicken balls for microplastics.
Yeah,
I heard that's the word. It's in us.
It's in us.
Well, that's what David Cronenberg said.
As soon as I read that, I was like, "Damn, that's what he's always."
He's always. Yeah. That's what I mean. You would talk shit about the movie, but he's just trying to be prophetic as usual.
He's just trying to warn us.
He's casual prophetic.
He's like, I'm not interested. Oh, yeah. Never mind. His influences are not other filmmakers.
Terrence Howard is trying. He's actually doing the work.
Yeah. Terrence Howard is going to tell you that the periodic table, what is it?
It's circular instead of a box.
Well, and also carbon and another one have the same tone.
They
have the same tone.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, what do you mean tone?
He's like, it's frequency, you know, 550 megahertz.
Shit, man. What else? But yeah, just busy with that. Oh, we got a new little puppy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like a puppy or like puppy, an old puppy?
A puppy.
Oh, boy.
Someone had dropped off a little box of chihuahuas at a church, and they took them to the animal shelters. Someone took them to the animal shelter from the church where Sophia volunteers, and she adopted one of them. She's 2 months old. Oof. And the other chihuahua, Bonzo, is having a hell of a time.
I bet.
But she's freaking awesome. And we're having trouble with the name. There was Scully, but Scully sucks. Also, Scully phonetically doesn't sound feminine, really. It's like Scully.
Why are you worried about that, dude?
Because she's non-binary. So, like, no, what? Never
Wait,
mind.
No, what?
No, and then we're settling on either Cookie or...
No.
Or yeah, because
I'm never gonna call your dog Cookie if you call it Cookie.
We like Gypsy.
Gypsy's better.
Gypsy, yeah, and it works. It's really phonetically.
I think Gypsy. We just named her Gypsy.
Yeah, it's a little Gypsy, and she sleeps with. So
you can call her Jippers.
Sophia and I are in the bed with two chihuahuas now. Yeah, these Bonzo sleeps in between me and Sophia, and then Gypsy sleeps right next to Sophia. And then she always tries to crawl over Sophia, and it's great. We're not getting much sleep.
Sounds like a wonderful time.
Oh yeah, and the fucking living room is all like, we use these little gates, you know, and so it's like Furiosa, dude. Like, we have to rearrange the fucking living room depending on the circumstance. You know what I mean? It's like George Miller's fucking Furiosa in the living room.
Jesus Christ!
Do you get what I mean?
Kind of.
It's like a fucking strategic.
Jacob's like, unfortunately.
Yeah. Because it's like spatial awareness. Like,
oh,
you gotta,
my God.
What's our alignment on the fucking bullet farm today? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, because that movie's like that. That movie's got, bro, you got some geography going on in these scenes.
It's very video game.
It is.
I was like, you ever play a video game where you gotta escort a convoy? Because it's 2 hours of that.
You will have a clear idea of...
I mean, that's kind of what Fury Road was, too.
That's one mission. This is 40 years of missions.
No, I have a clear idea on one viewing of the Bullet Farm's geography of where things are. Like, it's fucking totally, like, schematic. It's crazy.
Is, yeah.
It does have that going for it.
All right.
But, yeah. Cool. Otherwise, doing pretty good.
Okay.
How have you been?
I've been pretty good. Work has been a ongoing nightmare, but that's fine. We're working on our house right now, which is another nightmare, but otherwise okay.
What are you doing?
We are replacing some termite-damaged wood and also water-damaged wood on our framing structure of our house, which was discovered a couple weeks ago. Yeah, it's good.
That's why it's good to buy a house.
Totally, totally good. Yeah. And the constant maintenance of everything, and you know, I just added a pool onto the whole thing. So just,
dude, look, man, look at it this way. You own the termites too.
I own them. Yeah, exactly. From a metaphysical standpoint, I own them.
That's just like the resentment of someone who doesn't own shit. Like, that's my revenge.
Yeah, you're the termites?
Yes. Why didn't mean it like that? God. Who wants to talk about what they watched?
I can start.
Oh, shit.
We started watching this show that's based off of a novel. I've talked about it before, Dark Matter, by Blake Crouch. It is the novel is kind of a timey-wimey multiverse thing. And it was released on Apple TV Plus. The first two episodes were released on the premiere. We're up to episode 4. So I really like the novel. It's a trippy, like you're reading it and you almost feel like you're having a fever dream. And I was kind of...
We're big on fever dreams these days.
Apparently.
Yeah.
And I was having kind of a hard time understanding how they would translate that to film or to TV. I won't be lying if I say like they can't. There's no way that they can like translate in the book what's going on this show. But I will say, other than that, the show is pretty enjoyable. The pacing is a little bit all over the place. Like there's sometimes I feel like it's a little frenetic, and there's times that I feel like they dwell in these moments of like these relationships that kind of irritate me a little bit. But I think overall, if you're a fan of the novel, the show is not too terribly different and at least fun to get into.
Yeah.
If you have no idea what the book is and you've never read it, this is like a purely like sci-fi with some horror elements sprinkled in there. I think it's super enjoyable so far. We'll see what happens in the next handful of episodes.
What?
Damn. Where can you stream it?
Apple TV Plus.
Apple TV Plus. You're a big champion of Apple TV.
I think they got good stuff on there. I mean,
they got a nice budget to all their shit.
It looks nice. They do. Yeah. It has. So you know how like Netflix, like straight to Netflix movies, have that look like trash,
like Rebel Moon.
Yeah. This is the exact opposite. Like everything that Apple TV Plus puts out has like an Apple TV Plus look to it.
Yeah.
But it's nice. Like the everything looks.
Even if it's like mediocre, like Foundation or something. Yeah. Or like those just look beautiful. Or like
Killers of the Flower Moon. Yeah. You know,
they produced that, so they can do no wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they you know, the oil rigs look very, very good. Very good photorealistic CGI oil rigs.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
Great movie.
You know what it needed was a satellite shot of Australia fucking zooming in.
You know what? I started fucking, which was, I'm all about that.
No, it's fucking
I'm
dumb.
Fucking all about that. And I started Beyond Thunderdome last night after Fury Road. Because this, Furiosa makes you immediately want to watch Fury Road.
Yes. Right? I wish I watched Fury Road after, not before. Yeah. Before we get into this, what else did you be checked out lately?
So, well, that was the main thing. So, I've been kind of watching random, obviously random things. I started The Hobbit again just because I wanted to hate watch it again.
Damn right.
I don't know what it is about that, dude. Like,
Shit is slow, dude.
I'll watch Lord of the Rings and just be fully enthralled in the universe. Then I go, okay, well, let's see how The Hobbit's doing these days.
Yeah, it might have aged better.
Nope. It's worse. And then there's, you know, the stuff that's
the frame rate thing.
The stuff that was obviously filmed on a GoPro, like the water scenes are obviously filmed on a GoPro, and it's awful.
Right.
Like
that whole little barrel chase type deal.
Yeah. You can tell, like, they were like, oh, what the fuck are you doing here, bro?
Yeah.
But no. So Dark Matter, really good. So Jennifer Connelly and Joel Edgerton are the leads.
Nice.
And he's doing his thing. He's moody as fuck in this show. And
this is that one.
Okay. Yeah.
Joel Edgerton. Well, I see that everywhere. The advertisement.
It's pretty good. This isn't
any kind of ass to ass action in this one, since Jennifer Connelly's in it.
There's like dick to ass action, which is pretty good. I mean, I'm into that. That's pretty much it for watching. But Ronnie and I, and this isn't a new game, but Ronnie and I started playing a game called Kingdom Two Crowns.
Kingdom Hearts. Yes.
It is a roguelite side-scrolling town builder cooperative game. So
it's post-punk.
It's very post-punk. Yeah, very post-punk. It's almost like Warcraft was a side-scroller and cooperative.
This looks cool.
It's fucking crazy. So we have Ronnie and I are pretty much like, it's 10:30, time for bed kind of people. Motherfucker, if we haven't been up 2 weeks till 1 a.m. playing this game.
Oh shit.
Straight up.
Welcome.
like we'll start playing when the kids are in bed, you know, 9 o'clock we'll start playing. And 10:30 will hit and it's like, oh, we should probably go to bed. And then, okay, one more section. And then it'll be 12:30 and we're like, oh fuck, it's time. it's time for bed. You have that, like, you're looking at it, you're like, oh shit, the sun's coming up. But no, it's really, it's almost meditative in terms of like the actual gameplay. Like, there isn't a whole lot of action. It's a pretty slow paced game, but, and it came out like 5 years ago, five, seven years ago. It's on the Switch, it's on PlayStation, it's on Steam. If you have somebody you like to play video games with in a cooperative nation, cooperative way,
Rhythm Nation.
I highly recommend it. It's a fun game, and there is some DLC. There's a Shogun version, so like Feudal Japan. It changes like the skin of the game.
Feudal Japan is so hot right now.
Fuck yeah. There's a Viking version of it. Damn. There is also like a zombie-esque version of it called Deadlands. We haven't gone there yet, and we haven't done the Viking stuff yet.
Don't do that zombie thing.
We're going to do it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we got it. Dude, it's, and on top of that, it's like $19.
And it's a it has the town building thing?
It has a town building
thing. I dig that shit.
You should. Cool. I mean, I don't know if Sophia's been playing video games with you at all.
We haven't, because we just, yeah, we're
so... This would be a good one because it's very passive. Like, you basically like build your structures, the waves attack at night, and as long as you're built up, it's pretty like it does it by itself.
Minimal, right, you get micro. The gratification of seeing that process.
There's very minimal micro. It's not like you're not playing StarCraft. It's very, very fun.
It's not like you need to keep going and getting gold every 20 minutes to be able to build more shit.
It is, but if you set yourself up right, it's less fussy than that.
Okay.
But there's also like a very...
Because that's Farmville.
There's also a very interesting, like, the whole game is built on seasons. So, like, it's not real time, but in-game real time, it's like summer, spring, summer, fall, winter. And if you're not prepared for winter, you get fucked because, you know, that sort of thing. But it's...
As always.
Right.
As it should be.
Exactly. So anywho, that's it.
If you haven't hoarded all your acorns by winter, you're fucked.
Yep. Yes. Kind of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still fucking sore that Hades 2 is not going to come out for the fucking Switch.
Sorry. I'm struggling right now with Hades 1. Not struggling. It just, you know, I'm not good at it.
Get but good. That's the get what do you good, mean? Scrub?
I know. I just feel like I am always stuck on the fucking third world.
Elysium.
Yeah, right after the Hydra.
The Minotaur?
The Minotaur. I'm always stuck on the Minotaur.
Bro, let me give you a tip.
Oh.
Take out the Minotaur first, and then you take out that fucking...
Theseus.
I don't know, you could do one before the other.
You can. Take out the Minotaur first.
If you take out Theseus first, then the Minotaur rages.
And do not get too close to, obviously, to the rhinoceros fuck. Or whatever he is, the Minotaur, he has a name.
The bullfuck.
Yeah, and it's stick and move. Stick and move, fucking long range attacks.
What weapon all do that you shit. Use? What's your go to?
God, I haven't played in months, but I like the mix. You mean what weapon do I use? Oh, I like the staff. Thing, especially because you throw it, and that's great for fucking, especially when you're learning. For these long range shit, not learning, when you're building up your strength,
because
that's going to help you out with fucks like that Minotaur.
I always love the gauntlet build. That's where I would roll.
Gauntlet's fucking great, but it's not great necessarily for the Minotaur. Like, if you're really struggling getting past that section, I'd recommend a long range weapon like the staff.
Then I got to change it up then. Okay. And
here's another thing. Your dash, like the whole dash move, if you get the fucking, who's the water guy?
The fucking Aquaman.
Aquaman, basically. Yeah. Aquaman. Poseidon. Yeah. Fucking dude, your dash with Poseidon fucks people up because it's the crushing power of water, dude. Oh. So your dash, like most of my hits come from the dash. Like I'm just dashing everywhere. And then also you're not being hit.
So go with like a mobility build. Okay.
Mobility, exact. Mobility, long range. And then for the close attacks, I'm dashing. Because as soon as I'm moving, they're getting hit again. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's dope. I never really thought about it like that.
Look at that.
Like anytime I move out of the way, they're getting hurt.
I'm getting advice from someone who doesn't play video games.
Isn't that crazy?
I played that one a lot.
He played dude, he dumped so many hours in that game.
Yeah, I was charging. That's when I had the Leaf. I'm charging the fucking car playing that game.
Yeah.
At work. Dude, I love that game. That makes me want to play it right now. But, once you get past those fucks, then it's like, No, I'm not. It's not easy, but once you get like the empowerment of it, you're
that's, you know, it's so true. Because like when you get to the snake boss, it's almost trivial at that point. Like,
well, he's in the the lava fucker that in the lava.
That's before.
Place. That's before Minotaur? Elysium. It's before Elysium.
Okay.
But then you get to Hades. The thing is, dude, like it's totally your training ground to beat Hades because all of the techniques you're going to learn with that Minotaur, Hades is basically the battle is like that, but three times longer.
Yeah. It's every boss combined type of thing.
And he's got like five or six more attacks you need to memorize what happens when he does them.
Multiple stages. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Shit. Anyway, that's the Hades podcast.
Fuck.
But dude, yeah, I'm gonna need to get a fucking I'm gonna need to get a fucking system because I'm not waiting. Jakey Cheeseburger was right.
You're not gonna be Waities. What?
Waities?
Yeah. Instead of Hades.
I'm not gonna that's pretty good.
Hi.
What else? What else, man?
Shit. Well, what I've been watching, a lot of rewatches, rewatch Godzilla, X Kong, New Empire. Still love haven't it.
Seen it.
It's still fucking dumb in the best way possible. I just it's so ridiculous, dude. And but I went on about that a few episodes ago. Rewatched Sasquatch Sunset. Still, I think maybe like 9 or 10 in my top 10 of the year. It's fucking just wacky, and I love the little DNA parts. If you could tell when Ari Aster kind of had his hands on it, you know, and his influences. Rewatched, had a little Guy Ritchie double feature. It's really random. I just rewatched The Covenant for like the fifth time.
Hell yeah.
And finally watched the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare because that's now out to stream.
I heard that was kind of a mess.
It was a little inconsistent, but you know, it wasn't as like mid as I thought it would be. It's just the action doesn't have like, you know, Guy Ritchie is not known for doing incredible action set pieces, and this movie does have quite a bit of action towards the end. Like everyone's just using silencers and just gets old after a while, you know? Like I want like some very like textured action, you know?
You want to get Covenant.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So it doesn't have that. It's definitely a spy movie. Like it's a lot of that type of shit. A lot of spy craft, which is fun at times and kind of boring. And yeah, but that was that. Also watched Challengers, fucking Luca Guadagnino's next new film with Zendaya and some other dudes I've never seen before, and I loved Challengers. That's probably top five of the year.
Is it more her speed instead of Dune?
Yes, way tremendously better. Way more to work with. It's this film about just rivalry, jealousy, codependency. I mean, it's really like Codependency the movie. That's what people are saying. It's really explores this kind of thruple relationship. These kind of
bisexual men getting cucked.
Yeah, it's definitely a bisexual. It's a movie
with dance music and tennis.
Yeah, it's fucking something, man. And then I watched it like close to two times. The other time was at work, because when you realize everything they talk about in this movie, it's not about sex and it's all about tennis. Everything, every dialogue is about tennis.
Is it about tennis, dude?
It's about power, tennis. Dude.
Yeah. And seeing...
My head's in Hades, dude. I have so much more to tell you when we're not recording.
Okay.
I have Artemis. You want to make friends with Artemis.
Artemis?
That's yes. She's fucking dope with her... You know the super move you do? That'll take out that snake in one thing. That'll take off like a third of the fucking dude's energy. That's anyway. I just want to... Okay.
Okay. Yeah. I'll write it down. Yeah.
Sorry about that. Challengers.
Challengers, man. You gotta check it out. The fucking score is... That's... I mean, it was hyperbole when I talked about Mutant Mayhem being one of Trent Reznor's like best scores since Social Network. But no, like this though, Challengers really is probably his best work since Social Network. Trent Reznor and Ross. Okay. It's been on repeat. The whole movie would be fucking trash if it wasn't for it. Like
it's just part of the texture of the film.
Statement. Oh, I wouldn't say trash, but it is a completely different movie. Like completely different
because of the score.
If it wasn't for the score. It's fucking.
It's a character in the movie.
It really is, yeah. Man. And the buildup of it, the movie, it does the whole turn. The beginning is the end thing, and they revisit it periodically.
Oh shit!
The whole thing's flashbacks leading up to the match between two feuding friends, and the buildup is like unbelievable. Like last 10 minutes, I wish I saw it in theaters, because I'm reading on Reddit, people were like, our theater was like, it was like watching a live tennis match. People were screaming and cheering, and it's fucking crazy.
You, man, like tennis, dude?
No, I don't.
No, yeah, I mean,
still,
exactly.
Still no.
No, but it's dude, I want to. I've been wanting to see the movie. I love the score too. I've listened to it not as much as you, but several times all the way through.
Yeah,
in the car. And stuff, and I love that score. It's one of my favorites from them.
But you haven't seen the movie yet?
No.
Huh.
I want to.
I'm going to wait, though.
Yeah, watch it in theaters, because I regret not seeing it.
I want to see it in Dolby, because of the... Well, like you're saying. Like, this is...
I listened to it at home, but I had the Sennheisers on and everything, and I got, like, the full effect through the audio itself was just... blew me away.
So the question is, it goes back to what Jorge said. If she's good in this, you know, we know she can do it. What was her problem in Doom Part 2? No, I'm just kidding. No.
Really, what was her problem?
Chani in the books, Chani in the movies. Oh. Like, what's the thing?
Yeah.
No.
And then to round out what I've been watching, and then we could segue into our talk, but I revisited all the Mad Max films. Well, I didn't have time for one. I only watched part of one, which I actually regret, because leading up to it, Furiosa, it truly it captures a lot of the DNA from 1 and 2, Mad Max 1 and 2. It feels Aussie as fuck. Like, it's super Australian, very Ozploitation at times, but like an evolutionary step of it, because it's very, very like, intellectual, philosophical.
It is very philosophical.
Yeah, it's watching. It actually makes sense to watch something like the 10,000 Years of Longing, his genie movie beforehand.
Yeah,
because it is all of that. The myth making. The whole movie feels like it's a campfire tale told, and that there's going to be some sort of embellishment. So you got to suspend disbelief, because everything is like just being passed down through legend, basically.
It's kind of like it's already an elevated reality, and then he's like, it's even more elevated because the myth thing has happened. Yeah. The telephone game.
And you get that
that kind of makes sense.
Yeah, you get that in Road Warrior. You find out the narrator is the feral kid, and now he's the leader of the tribesmen, telling the story of the warrior of the wasteland who changed the tide of you know, their whole direction of their tribe.
And this some people theorize that Max in Fury Road is the feral kid.
Feral kid grown up, which I love that theory.
I like it too, man, because there's the music box, there's the boomerang, and even his the timbre of Tom Hardy's voice is very close to that.
Yeah.
You know?
Unfortunately,
I think the idea that Max isn't like a person. It's like a costume, so to speak.
He's just a force of nature. Yeah.
Hey, he's like Batman.
Yeah.
And he's this great, like, reluctant hero who
It's a Western, right? Yeah. He's the man with no name, but he has a name. Bang, 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 bang. He's Cotton Eye Joe.
Yeah.
It's great to see that we finally get the Furiosa story done, and the way that George Miller acknowledges that Fury Road is his magnum opus. Like, you can't beat that. So all he can do is make it even better by providing the backstory and like everything, because he wrote Furiosa and gave the script to the entire cast and crew making Fury Road, because there was no script for it. So he gave him the script to Furiosa. So everyone knows the whole backstory that worked on Fury Road. And so there's always been these hidden meanings and behind all the actions and dialogue in Fury Road. And now we finally get to see what it is. And like, you know, War Boy saying, "I want to die gloriously on the Fury Road." Now you get why, because like their life is like fucking just convoys on the Fury Road between Gastown and Bullet Farm, and just trying to survive. Because this movie is like, it's got some lulls, and it's got some fucking insanely bad green screen and CGI, and that's sad to see those parts. But if you can really just hurdle over that and get over the CGI and everything, it is like a fucking like total myth making just tale of like revenge and wrath. And, dude, I was fucking blown away by just how he captures the wasteland in this movie. It's so unrelenting and horrible. Like, you just want to, like, eat a bullet. Like, I would never want to live. Like, you watch Road War, and you're like, yeah, that's fucking cool, Burning Man, and all this shit. And then you watch this movie, and it's, like, dark and mean-spirited. And I think Dementis is a fucking really iconic villain. Yeah. But that's... I'm ready to watch it multiple times. Because I am obsessed with this world building, because it's really like George Miller's been edging this whole fan base with not providing any backstory, no world building and lore, and now like all the fans get it, and it's all like in one movie, and it's almost overwhelming at times. Yeah.
It's like Zack Snyder's. No, just kidding. Not at all. Not at all, man. So I'm gonna stop. I'll stop leaning
like,
into it.
It's like that zombie movie. Vegas.
No, I agree with almost every most of what you said, and maybe even almost everything. And of course, the major point of agreement. It's not. You would have to be blind to not acknowledge it. Like not you personally, the general you.
Yeah.
The green screen thing like is insane. That being said. Like you were saying, Fury Road was a fucking nightmare production that is unlikely. Yeah. We're unlikely to see anything.
You can never recreate it
like that ever again or anytime soon until some other dude takes a wild swing and it works out okay.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of wild swings taken, and what was it like a 3-year production on and off?
Oh my gosh, it's like he started in the early 2000s with Mel Gibson. Like they even went location scouting. Like the thing is like a 20-year
the gestation period for that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, so it's just fucking insane, right? So I didn't expect that it to top that. And what I'm really glad is in none of the Mad Max movies does he repeat himself. In preparation, I watched we watched The Road Warrior. Fuck, dude, Road Warrior is just fantastic.
It's my number one step.
And here's the thing. Anyone who, whether they like Furiosa or not, and even, you know, I'm looking online, there are even people who, they're there, they exist, that think Fury Road was dumb and nothing, not even as good as Beyond Thunderdome because they're just being purists and it has too much this. And it's like, you're not looking at the visual storytelling language of George Miller. You're focusing on a bunch of, like, superficial details. And that's the thing. Regardless of the CGI stuff in this, it's George Miller all the way through.
Yeah.
Like his visual, his mastery of space and editing and storytelling and mythology. Like the mythology part too, I'll agree with you. The Wasteland has never had as much of it as it does in this.
And everyone kept throwing around the words like it's myth-making, modern day myth-making. And I was like, okay, I get that. I can imagine like Conan the Barbarian or something.
Yeah.
But like I wasn't ready for this level of it. Like this is like true. Like I can't even imagine another film with this type of level of storytelling.
Yeah, there are decisions, though, like you said, and I don't want to just mention CGI or not, but it's most of the movie. It's a lot of the movie, a substantial portion, and a lot of it is like, you know, just go for the story is fan. It's not like I left it like the Star Wars prequels where I'm like, I want to act like I left Star Wars prequels like that's not Darth Vader. This didn't happen like this. Not only was the movie bad, but I was like, no, this didn't happen like this. I can't.
Yeah,
this is like I can totally buy and understand this happened like this. This is Furiosa's origin story. The story's fucking fine. It's great. Not just fine. It's great, honestly.
Yeah,
and I get it. And the performances are good. I think Chris Hemsworth does a good job. I don't think he's like fucking. I think the design of the character and like the teddy bear shit and all those little details, the conceptually are fucking great. Mm. I think he does really good.
Yeah, he chews scenery like everything.
It just doesn't like it doesn't get to that manic fucking edge of some of the other Mad Max movies though. I don't know exactly what it is. I don't know if maybe he just can't go there. Like he tries, he tries, and he's like, you know, he gets kind of wild. He
got pretty close, but not there.
Okay. Yeah, it just doesn't. I don't, and it's not just him. It's probably Miller.
For me, it wasn't the manicness, but there's a part where Dementis goes dark. Dementis.
Yeah,
and there's a fucking track in the soundtrack, Dementis's diatribe.
Yeah.
And when he goes dark and it's the scene of, without spoiling it, the cars are going in circles for days and shit. And it's I really liked his character in those moments. It's where he goes real dark, very serious and less loony.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it, man. His whole, like, he wants to be like this commanding, like, Roman god, you know, but he's also deep down just like a pirate captain, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite things about it is there's certain scenes, certain scenarios. Like there's one where a woman's tied to a tree, and you got a man interrogating her with fucking black horns on, and all this shit, which is just fucking incredibly like dark and oppressive and effective, even regardless of green screen stuff, because it's just the power of the imagery and what's being conjured is like, and you, it's very clear, like. What happens to what do men act like when they have no consequences for this kind of shit? Mm-hmm. And it's not, I'm not talking about me. I'm saying, like, yeah, it doesn't, all this stuff that we don't see is inferred. There's a part, one of the fucking, I mean, Rictus, we get to see Immortan Joe and the other guys which all that shit works really well. See, there's a scene though, like to me, where the War Boys, they start doing their thing, and it's so CGI'd out that I'm having a hard time getting fucking immersed.
That was the point where I was like, "Yo, this is Spy Kids."
Yeah,
like, this is the moment where I'm like, "This is rough." Like the Citadel looked pretty rough in Fury Road, and somehow it was worse.
Well, because because there was more photorealistic things in the shot with it.
Yeah, and they did film all the Citadel scenes, which are the bookends of Fury Road.
Yeah,
like 6 months after they wrapped shooting, they actually ran out of budget. They pulled the cord, and they're like, "Fuck!" And then it wasn't until they got a new president at Warner Brothers. He's like, "I will give you 6 weeks to film beginning and end," which is why those look really low budget too.
Yeah, I actually think the tone of this one is the most like because of we're on this show. Kind of the most horror-y. Like 100%. We got maggots and we got fucking arms ripped off.
Yeah, you see they're called the Wretched Below. Those the peasants that are like living underground and stuff. And that shit's dark, man.
That shit was dark. And there's a scene with Rictus where he tries to take a girl in the middle of the night and take him to his room. And his room is a bunch of fucking little dolls. Which is like, dude, like this is really... That's what I mean when I say this is a George Miller film. Like, he's off the fucking wall with his ideas and these images and the concepts and the art direction.
Yeah,
it's just fucking insane.
He knows the entire history. He's got, like, probably a Bible written of the entire lore of the Wasteland.
Yeah.
And he just refers to it. It's in everything. Even the video games. There's characters in Furiosa that are in the Mad Max game, like Scrotus and Chum Bucket. And all these characters from the video game actually make... sizable appearances in Furiosa, which is fucking impressive, man. Like, it's gonna suck because the dude, I don't think, has enough time in his life to make one more movie. And I want him to, because he always wanted a trilogy of Fury Road, Furiosa, and Mad Max The Wasteland, which was gonna be the final one. Yeah. And I'm like, the dude's fucking 80 now.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's gonna be 90 when he makes it. It's like, I feel like this is a franchise that's going to go to the director of Maze Runner, and it's going to fall apart. Like, I'm sad that we need George Miller alive, because only him can pull off the storytelling. Well, because once he's gone, Warner Brothers can say, fuck all of that, because he's not around anymore. Because
the IP's theirs.
Yeah.
And also, that's what I don't like seeing that happen. That hasn't happened yet, but him opening the door with this, like, Sin City 300 approach. With the CGI, because it's like, it feels like a comic book film on par with those.
Yeah,
it's still a George Miller movie, but you get what I mean.
Yeah,
like it's well executed, but it's very much in that wheelhouse, like as far as using CGI for those kinds of graphic novel type imagery. Like, he's already opened that door, and so then someone's just gonna be like, oh, he just went full CGI, cool, we can do that. Let's get Mick G to fucking do a
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I feel like it's gonna be.
But
Peter Berg's Wasteland.
No. Oh, please no. Peter, he was great in Shocker though.
Yeah.
Oh, Shocker! We did a Patreon special episode on Shocker. Woo! By the way,
we sure did.
And that movie, if you want to hear what we thought about it, well, it is it's crazy. We'll tell you that. You can go to
www.
Go for it.
No, I just said.
patreon.com/ who goes there podcast. You get exclusive episodes, you get the episodes early, you get access to the Discord, and also we are in the midst, we've been saying this for a minute, but we want to throw some new merch on the merch store. We want to use some of Cal Gee is the guy who does our art for the shows, like if you go to our Instagram page and on the website as well, and on Spotify, wherever you can find us. The original art is done by a guy named Cal Gee. If you want to, he's up in Canada. We really appreciate him. He's the invisible.
Forgive him for that.
He's the invisible fourth member of the band.
Right.
It's like, you know how Deftones has like the DJ?
Yeah.
That's it. No, okay.
It's like Incubus.
No, we don't need any scratching. We do have some shout outs though. John White upped his pledge on Patreon.
Hell yeah, brother.
Hell motherfucking yeah. And Michael Shero.
Hell yeah, brother. Upped
his pledge as well. Thanks very much to both of you guys. And also, like, Michael, like, he likes every single story, every single post. We really appreciate your support.
We've got good engagement with just him.
Yeah, dude, like.
Gives us a dopamine hit every time
Every time.
Yeah.
And I guess it seems like it must be mutual. And hopefully you're getting more than one hit right now, because
Yeah.
Because we appreciate you.
Yeah. And then a quick shout out. I mentioned this on the Patreon. I went more into detail, but shout out to Puccini Weenie 69 on our Discord and our Patreon member. This guy sent me some nice little gift from Canada, some gummies he made, some edibles. And I won't get into too much detail. It's on the Patreon, but
you had to call 911.
It destroyed you.
Yes, shit. I've never been so blasted off edibles ever. And it was during. And thank God I saw Furiosa two times in a row back to back in theaters, because the first one, when the edibles started kicking in, I basically like blacked out for 20 minutes. My hearing went out, my vision went out, and I was just on. I was along for the ride, dude. I was like a victim of road war. So it was pretty dope. No, but it was actually fun. And thank you for that gift. I went through all of them. Courtney and I did, and we had a great time. It's probably why I enjoy Challengers.
Did Courtney feel like she was poisoned too?
No. She's got way higher tolerance than me.
Damn.
But yeah, right. Thank you.
One more shout out. I know I mentioned this guy a lot, but it's the dude in Germany.
One of our cons. Our weekly.
He says, "Hey, Rhett," and he spelled my name right. Okay,
it's not Rhett.
No, you guys fucking love to do that. Sure, I've seen Zone of Motherfucking Interest. Like Kimmel said on the Oscars, it's our favorite romantic comedy around here. So yes, he gets the joke. That's good. He's still mm-hmm, listening. Mm-hmm. By the way, Hundreds of Beavers was great. So fucking.
I started it.
Further confirmation that we are interested in that.
Okay.
And then Sasquatch Sunset was like Harry and the Hendersons minus the Hendersons plus shit, piss, and mother's milk. Great stuff. Hmm. So he Hell concurs yeah. with Jacob. And then he mentions something here that I do want to mention. P.S. The Substance movie premiered at Cannes. Sounds awesome.
It's Con?
Con. I don't give a shit. I'm. Yeah, okay. Is it Con?
Yeah.
It's Con.
The Con Film Festival? I actually
Googled how to pronounce it. Today.
Do you you guys know what the Substance movie is?
No.
Okay, so the lady who directed Revenge.
It's Corey Forgy.
Fargo.
Oh,
it's her follow-up, and it's got Demi Moore, and the fucking poster looks incredible, and the word of mouth about it.
Oh, with the stitches down the back or something like that?
Yeah. They said it's fucking fantastic, so I'm like already aboard the hype.
Yeah.
Thing for this one. It's coming out late. It should be coming out stateside later this year.
Yeah.
They said it's a fucking body horror masterpiece. Equal parts The Fly and something else.
Yeah. Her and then the chick who did Titan.
Titan. Yeah.
That's.
And Raw.
Yeah.
And it's good, man. It's I'm excited.
Yeah.
And I think we're excited about Long Legs. So far, one of the best fucking marketing campaigns for a horror movie in some time, in my opinion.
Yeah, we forgot to mention that. That's one of the best trailers I've seen for a horror film in ages.
Yeah, because they, talking about edging, they edged us. I didn't even expect a trailer at this point.
Still have not even given away a single plot point or anything, and I'm okay with it. Like, that's best. That's the best marketing for sure.
There you go.
And then, I'll talk about I Saw the TV Glow at Another Time.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, well, the Who Goes Your Podcast watched 1991's The People Under Stairs along with 1989's Shocker, as Rhett said earlier.
It's kind of like Shocker!
Kind of a companion piece. People Under Stairs from 91. The IMDb synopsis goes like this. Two adults and a juvenile break into a house occupied by a brother and a sister and their stolen children. There, they must fight for their lives. This was the first watch for you, right, Jacob?
Yes.
What'd you think?
So, I'm glad, and I can't believe I've managed to go in blind with this movie. I've known about it for years. I've always wanted to see it. The stars never aligned until now.
That's what you get for prioritizing John Carpenter movies. No, I'm just kidding. No, just kidding.
No, seriously, though, I didn't know Wes Craven could fuck like this, and it's my number one favorite Wes Craven film.
What?
I fucking loved every minute of it. I'm glued to the screen.
I'm going to steal all the Jorge stuff. Sheesh!
It takes this whole, like, locked room haunted house plot mm-hmm. and kind of flips it and turns into this cat and mouse thriller with zero supernatural elements, and it's just, it's fucking crazy. The energy and chaos with this very, you know, like I mentioned how Shocker, without spoiling too much of the Patreon, takes a lot of DNA from Nightmare on Elm Street. And I feel like this takes a lot of DNA from like The Hills Have Eyes with some of the chaotic energy, and
puts it in the city.
Yeah, and this villain too. This couple, man. This we're talking like Texas Chainsaw Sawyer family, just bonkers ass shit.
But without the fucking
though. Yeah,
and I mean, speaking of that couple, they're both in Twin Peaks as a couple.
Oh really?
Which is fucking great.
Wait, that's the log lady?
Yeah.
Not the log lady.
Yeah, no, it's the
blinds lady.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that was her.
That's both. They're a couple twice, and both times they're fucking absurd.
Incredible. Yeah. And I can only imagine that Wes Craven was invited to the barbecue after this movie because fucking the dude.
That he's what's up. Yeah. He knows what's up. And he brought potato salad.
Yeah.
Whoa, you guys don't get to say that, okay?
We do.
Nah, man. Only if. If I got a hat like Ving Rhames has in this movie, I could say that.
That hat is very like...
That's the pure essence of In Living Color, 1991.
And that's the jacket, too.
Jacket.
So I hadn't seen... So People Under the Stairs is a film that as a kid I watched with my friends fairly constantly. I mean, because it's... I mean, it's rated R, but it is like fairly accessible for kids. It's not like... You know,
what a nightmare movie to show to kids.
Well, that's good though. That's good.
Yeah. It's like education.
I wouldn't show it to my kids.
Psychoeducation film.
Pero, and I go probably like years and years and years without rewatching this movie. Last time we talked about it, I don't even remember what I had said, but I still think I go back to this movie and really enjoy it. And as far as like a nostalgia thing for me. It's a better nostalgia film for me than it is an actual film. Cause I'm watching it and I'm like, okay, well this is, you know, this is what it is. But like at the end of the day, dude, it's a fun haunted house movie. And that's all there is to it for me. I'm with it. I love this movie.
Unacceptable. No. Okay. Sophia and I had watched this a couple years ago. And it was great. And then I rewatched it in the last couple days to prepare for this on the show. So I want to point out Who Goes There is Through the Looking Glass now. This was done on the show.
Right.
In 2014 with you and Matt and Chris. Mm-hmm. So this is, as far as I know, the first time you're doing a revisiting the same movie twice with 10 years between them and with different people. Two of those, you're the only one.
I'm the holdout.
You're the holdout. And like you said, you can't remember what you said the previous time, but I really, really, I'll go. I kind of love this movie because besides that, I think it's a good subgenre again. These socio-political horror movies, like it has all that, but it doesn't beat you over the head with it. It's all just implicit in the setup. It's in the premise of the film. And I think you nailed it, even conceptually. It's like, I'm going to take The Hills Have Eyes and put it in the city because it is in the city.
Yeah.
It is in the fucking city. Like, mm-hmm. we're going to see the Trump flags very soon, right?
Yeah.
So then
the Trump flags are implied in this movie.
Exactly.
Pre-implied.
Absolutely. So that's with the structure, like you said, structurally, it's a haunted house film. Mm-hmm. But so conceptually, it's this socio-political examination of this the whole fucking get down there. And then he has...
Whoa, like, you can't say get down, dude.
Oh, we can't say anything.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to...
Just say old English. And even that's fucking a lot from the Celtics, which are their own indigenous population that was fucked over.
Just, you know.
I could just speak fucking Aramaic.
You could go way back.
So that's the language Jesus spoke, dude. Which this couple would appreciate is this vehemently racist, insane, psychopathic couple.
Yeah.
That has no fucking consequences. And when the cops show up, it's like, whatever, it's a white couple. There's nothing going on in this
house.
They're
cool.
There's no way he dresses up in all fucking leather and hunts people for mom. Mommy. And that's what I mean. Again, Wes Craven he's like, I got a concept, I got a structure, but I'm going to fucking take it over the edge. He's going to show up in his fucking, in the gimp suit.
With a shotgun, blasting holes in the wall like he's trying to hunt for Roger Rabbit.
It's absolutely a fucking indelible image and scenario. And again, it's just like drain the context from this situation. You're just like, what the fuck am I watching right now? And he just goes that extra level there. Mm-hmm. I think that's good for the intro. I like the movie.
I like just the setup, the character motivations of the characters. You got this kid who is like, that's like one of the best fucking child actors I've seen. Like, it's his performance is better than the whole cast of Imaginary.
He's far better than he needs to be in this movie.
He had no business being that
unbelievable.
Good. Yeah, and I was like, okay, I
guess. And if Jorge's saying that, because this motherfucker tears into some kid actors.
Yeah, and I was like, I thought child actors are supposed to suck ass.
They do mostly.
Yeah, and I'm like, this dude is like better than the entire cast of like Tarot and Imaginary combined. Like, he just shits on all those.
Not a high bar to.
Yeah,
to
right.
Brandon Quinton Adams. That's what he's in: The Sandlot and The Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, my man my man. It's no slouch.
Yeah.
No, he's not.
Got some chops. He's great. And how he has to become the head of the house and take over and do whatever he needs to support the family from being evicted. And I love that motivation. And then the setup of where the villains are. And you could see, like, I think Don't Breathe must have been, like, inspired by it, where it's, like, this house where everything around it has already been, like, kind of vacated and abandoned. So it's just this isolated thing where they can get away with all the horrific shit that they're doing. And I just think the setup is fucking original.
It's really interesting because so Ving Rhames' character goes into that house, right? And he goes, well, you know, even rich people still got rats, right? Where it's like this couple, the brother and the sister, clearly have no desire or no care for money because they've got literal gold in their in their basement, but they're still living in this dilapidated, you know, basically crack house where they've got, you know, people trapped underneath. And so their care for money is like it's nothing. They just want to torture people. And
well, it's like, here we go, it's like the free market idea, right? Like, this is where does the free market take you? Well, look at LA. Where did it take it? And it takes it to a scenario like that. Like, the fucking, it's destroyed, it's decimated entire urban centers.
Yeah.
And then you got these fucking, like, cartoonish, hyperbolic, basically, figures representing conservatism.
Yeah. Right?
This really cartoonish fucking ways.
It's they're like, almost parody.
Yeah, like Nancy Reagan and Ronald Reagan, like on fucking crack. You know what I mean? Basically. That's definitely in there.
Well, the idea that these guys are like hiding in plain sight, right? So they're in a poor neighborhood, and they're seen as like rich people, which they. I mean, I guess technically they are. Yeah, but, well,
because of the equity stuff, like sociopolitical in that area.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
their access to things and also their immunity from consequences.
They're rich.
The privilege.
They're rich in the sense that like cops will show up to their house and it's like nothing's going on here. Like continue on.
Exactly. Well, no, because they're going to be much more. Let's get it straight too. Like, let's get it straight, dude. I can't say that either, right? Or I don't know. Is that one of them? No. Okay.
that you brought attention to it is the really disturbing part. I think that's
now
the
I'm
part.
Like the people.
You're the people under the stairs.
I'm running the house that the people under the stairs live in.
Jacob and I are roach.
They have to eat each other to survive.
Exactly.
What the fuck was I gonna say?
Who knows, man?
Go back. Oh, they're going there to steal. They're going there to steal stuff, right? And that's a good. It's like, well, they're going to commit a crime. It's like, yeah. The to steal stuff for survival, right? Which is different because, I mean, again, the whole get down is to treat property as more important than fucking human life. And that's exactly what's it's occurring here on an exaggerated scale, but not really exaggerated. It's only exaggerated because it's condensed to fucking like one location.
Yeah.
Their house, right? But that's the dichotomy. It's like, well, fucking, you know, well, they're stealing. It's like, yeah, well, they're fucking like they've got people in their house and
under the stairs
and they're fucking psychotic murderers.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, man. And it's I think it was brilliant that they showed the POV of your villains in this movie. Like, I'm glad they it wasn't just from the perspective of the kid. You actually got to see everything happen, and they're inconvenienced by these, you know, people under the stairs and the people invading their home and stuff. And I just thought I thought that was really great to see that shift in perspective. And, you know, the movie's called People Under the Stairs. It's not like it's going to be a big reveal.
Right.
You kind of already set up with that.
That obsession about people invading my space, right? Mm-hmm. Right, which goes into, like, you got the whole thing with the border.
Yeah.
When, and again, too, like, I think when Jorge, you said that it, nostalgically for you, it's a better movie. And that's the thing. It's very much a time capsule. This, for me, this is one where it's a time capsule film. It's 1991. But it's also timeless because it's like, oh, well, I'm glad this stuff's no longer relevant. Like, yes, it will never not be relevant because it's always been going on. It's just in this.
Always has been, dude.
Always has been, dude. The fucking astronaut pointing the gun at you, dude.
Okay. You were telling me you actually knew people or someone that, like, completely, like, it went over their head with, like, all, like.
Oh, God. I didn't want to bring that. But since you brought someone online.
Because I always thought, like, okay, is it going to be, like, kind of like a total undertone? It's like a thematic. No, it's straight up.
It's overt.
It's pretty overt.
It's,
yeah.
And by overt, I mean it's the premise of the film.
Yeah.
And it's the selection of the time, place, and racial identity of the protagonist. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like the whole point of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck, dude? Yeah. It doesn't exist without them being psychotic racists.
Yeah.
And the gentrification and all of none, the scenario in this film doesn't exist without those elements. Mm-hmm. And that shows you.
Yeah, this specific film. You could do this film without the overt racism, but it wouldn't be this film.
It wouldn't be People Under the Stairs. Yeah. Which, like, what the fuck, man?
It'd be The Hills Have Eyes.
Exactly. It would be Hills Have Eyes out there in the boonies, right? Yeah. Like, fucking, and so it's one of those things where that's the whole point. Like, the person saying this online was like, it's a horror, and they're like, LOL, it's a Wes Craven movie. And it's like, yeah. And it's like, Wes Craven's white, you know that, right? Okay. And it's like, so you're totally, you can't see what I'm saying because that's the point of the movie.
Well, that's as far as you can, that's the problem, because a person like that is never going to see further than, like, it's a white guy doing this movie.
Yeah, well, and then the good thing, though, that it didn't devolve because I didn't just, like, fucking, I stayed on this longer than I should have, but it ended up in a place where he's all, I just think it's a good horror movie, bro, you know? And I'm like, that was, like, with characters that were specifically selected for these things with these issues, I agree. And he's like, yeah, I can agree to that. It's like, okay, just because we didn't feel like getting fucking cortisol going. But, I mean, you know, other people chimed in about how obvious the whole post that we were commenting on was talking about the socio-political stuff of the movie. Mm-hmm. And then people are chiming in saying, there's none of that. That's not what it is.
That's crazy. You, dude.
And which,
it's
exactly.
Like, oh, you're wrong.
It's like, it's like, dude, like,
even like from
Wes Craven disagrees with you.
Even from, like, an interpretation standpoint, you're wrong.
Like you're,
unequivocally, you're wrong.
You're just fucking wrong.
Yeah.
Like, fucking dude. It's kind of like fucking Nightmare on Elm Street isn't about fucking Freddy Krueger, a dude with a fucking glove that kills people in their dreams.
Right, right. Ignoring all the pedophile stuff. Like that's all it is, dude. It's a guy with a glove, dude.
Because I get the idea that people have this fatigue about everything being politicized because they don't want to be woke. I mean, that's who I'm at.
Oh,
I'm interacting with one of those people. I get your idea, but that's, like, wrong fucking movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's a fucking very political film.
Yeah, I understand when people are watching media that's otherwise not political, when you have somebody trying to insert that stuff into it can be frustrating, and it can be like, okay, dude, like,
and even then I don't have much patience for that because most everything's political,
right to a certain extent. But like with this film, if you're trying to argue the fact that, like, oh no, dude, there's nothing like, it's literally called People Under the Stairs, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's telling you.
It's about fucking socioeconomic oppression.
Yeah.
Yeah. That you could just call the movie Socioeconomic Oppression. And they'd be like,
dude.
It's a Wes Craven movie.
You're stupid.
It's about the gimp suit, bro.
Give me a guy with a glove, dude. That's what I want.
Yeah. But, Yeah, so and it's no surprise to me that Jordan Peele wants to produce a remake of it.
Seriously, yeah. I think when you see how Jordan Peele, I mean, he's not directing, he's just producing, but like just seeing his
interest. I wish he was directing
it. Yeah, because I like his, I could see the interest in it because his films kind of have this balance and tone. There's some tonal shifts between like some comedic beats and then like really horrific thematic shit too. And this movie, I think, is a perfect balance. It goes back and forth between the funny banter between Ving Rhames, the kid, and then and then you just have...
that line, he goes, 13, that's unlucky already. Too young for the tit, or too old for the tit, too young for pussy. I'm like, holy shit, dude. Bro. Like,
what are you saying,
I think, do you guys pick up on a little bit of, like, especially having watched Shocker, too, because Wes Craven's dialogue sometimes is, like, so silly. Like, he obviously knows it's silly. Like, he's not dumb.
Of course.
So he's like, I'm going to give you concepts, but I'm going to make the dialogue dumb.
Yeah.
Because I want you to be able to fucking, I want you to be able to understand it, right?
This was probably everybody's, like, first intro into Sean Whalen also, because, like...
Sean Whalen.
Not Scott Weiland.
No, yeah.
So, as Roach, like, this character...
Oh, yeah.
This is the first time I had ever seen Sean Whalen. You got...
Well, the souls were finding. Got time to wait for tomorrow.
To find it, to find it, to find it.
Wait!
Anywho,
I didn't know that was the actor's name.
Sean Whalen?
Sean Whalen.
Yeah, dude, Sean Whalen is great. He's always that dude in the movie when you see him. He's a very good character actor, and I think, like, I think he's perfectly used in this film. Like, I love Roach as a character.
Yeah, he had a nice, tight little character arc, you know, and how his character ends, you know. It was fantastic. Even, like, the small side characters have a big impact and kind of service the plot. Like I said, I like the pacing of it. It's seriously the tension building. I think it's like some of Wes Craven's best, like, use of tension.
Except for Shocker.
Thinking about... Yeah. Fuck yeah. Oh, Shocker! Again, going back to Roach, good point. Because he's a survivor, right? Mm-hmm. He's learned to thrive and somehow get a sense of empowerment and even, in a sense, retain his dignity.
And still not lose his humanity.
Exactly, because he's not just a piece of shit. It's very much like the wasteland type situation, mm-hmm. but it's confined. So again, that has to do with, like, it got me thinking about what's the symbolism. Like, he has no access to anything outside of that environment, right? So he has no access to anything. So it's a complete, like... Lack of equality, obviously, because he lives under the fucking stairs again, right? It's like in your face. But yeah, he's learned to fucking survive, and he's still humane.
Yeah.
Which is kind of not easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing to be humane when you're in society.
When it's simple.
And it's simple, and you have access to services and privileges, and also everyone's watching you all the time. It's another to remain humane in a situation.
I don't want to go too far down this road, but I wonder if, like, Wes Craven's idea behind, like, these and Roach specifically is, he's like giving kind of like, hey, like, even with all of this adversity, like, he's still able to be human.
He's the diamond in the rough.
Ah, dude, he's fucking Aladdin, dude. Oh, fucking the cave. That's the Cave of Wonders, bro.
That's the Cave of Wonders. And at the end of Adaptation, the Charlie Kaufman movie, right, that Spike Jonze directs, there's that little dandelion that pushes through the concrete.
Push little daisies and make it come up.
Push a little daisy.
You know that song? What do you guys talk about? That's a good song.
Bro, we'll play it after. We
should do Push that. Little Daisies on the edit for People Under the Stairs.
Okay. I'm in. So, I mean, look, overwhelmingly positive on People Under the Stairs?
Yeah, 100%. But wait, you're cutting it off already?
Not already. I mean...
It is, though. It's up there. That's, like, one of my favorite, like, new watches this year for me. And I'm really glad. I got to see it, especially at this age for the first time, and really kind of explore all the thematic shit. And I'm heavily impressed with it. I think this the balance of it, it's perfectly balanced, paced, the acting, Just its originality, you can kind of see how this inspired so much shit afterward. Like, I kept thinking about, like, Don't Breathe the whole time, of just how the isolation of
this
crazy family and the hidden, you know...
The claustrophobia of it.
Yeah, and even the shot geography, you know. We're fucking talking about Furiosa shot geography. This too, man. Like, I feel like I know the entire layout of that house, that two-story house, like where the attic is, where one room is, even the interconnected through the walls, like it all makes sense to me.
And he loves interiors, like, you know, both literally and figuratively, right? Mm-hmm. No, but when we watched Shocker, like fucking at the beginning of that, like at his TV lair, he's in the walls and shit again.
Yeah.
And Sophia's like, he loves fucking having people in the walls. And I'm like, he loves what it means. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah. He's all about, like, I want to get into the fucking innards of this structure. And, like, Ready or Not had a lot of that, like, we're going to be in the spaces between the fucking house, mm-hmm. you know? That kind of stuff.
It's well thought out. Like, the small details. When the protagonist is, again, like, case in the house, you know, and he's like looking at the little pond.
Yeah,
I mean, they revisit that later. He knows that there's a pond down there, so he can jump down safely. And then they revisit it again, and it's been drained and everything. Like, just the small details, I'm impressed with.
Even that scene with the at closer to the end, where he's you know, he put the coins on the candle. I thought that was such a brilliant little scene where he's like, oh, counting the money, huh? And then it's like, ah, no, I gotcha. I home alone your ass.
Yeah,
love it. Yeah. Love it, love it, love it.
To go full circle, what you said at the beginning again, Wes Craven stated that the film is, quote, much closer to The Hills Have Eyes than anything I've done in a long time. It's a raw film with no dreams in it whatsoever. It's an aftershocker. It's an extraordinary real situation involving an awful family that shouldn't exist, but unfortunately often does. Fuck. But yeah, so he's very conscientiously connecting that to his... To The Hills Have Eyes.
Exactly. And I think the only reason why they're making a remake isn't to, like, cash in on the popularity, because it's kind of faded a little bit. I imagine generation people my age and younger aren't too familiar with it.
With the IP, yeah.
Yeah, but I do feel like there is a very important story to tell. And I think it honestly should be remade, because if you just make it original, people would just call it a ripoff, so you have no choice but to remake it. But I think there's a great, great story and a lot of cool shit to tell about it.
Yeah, this is a film that I, thinking about it from a fan of this movie, I don't necessarily, I kind of look forward to a retelling of this story.
Yeah,
so do I.
Especially if it's, not that Jordan Peele would be at the helm directorially, but... From a producer standpoint, I feel like he would have enough like movement on it to be able to say, like, hey bro, that's like way, way off. I think it would do well.
You're a big Halloween Horror Nights guy.
Yeah.
This is apparently at Universal Studios Florida. They've done Mommy and Daddy's House.
No way.
Which is fucking cool.
Which is so creepy, by the way, when you find out they're brother and sister after all of that, too.
Which is, again, like, it's on point.
Yeah.
Fucking incestuous bastards.
Yeah.
What is it with these white people, Jorge?
You tell me.
If only everyone could be like the little problemista. You know what I mean?
If only everybody could be problemista instead of incestista.
Incestista. Infestista, incestista.
Yeah.
In Twister, I'm looking at these tidbits. This is the movie on the drive-in screen.
Really?
So that's dope.
Damn, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. And we got Twisters, too. We got Twisters.
Twisters.
We got twins! I hate that part of the fucking trailer. I hate it.
I saw it with some friends, Furiosa, that trailer came out, and, like, I didn't know my friend who was quoting it with me, too. He's seen the trailer so many times at this point.
You want to do Twisters on the show, huh?
I think so. Not that it's for sure confirmed in 4DX, but it has to be in 4DX, and it would be so crazy to see that shit.
You want
to
have 5DX, dude? I'll just fucking throw a thing of water in your face.
Oh, shit!
Have you guys experienced 4DX at all?
No.
No.
Yeah, wait. I did one for Avengers, and it was so fucking annoying to me.
Yeah. No, that's the beauty of it.
Because every time someone got punched, I was like,
it's a 2-hour Universal Studios ride, man. So 2-hour Twisters Universal Studios ride. It's fucking nuts, man. I've seen like six, seven movies this week. I've even seen Gremlins 1.
Captain EO was the last like 4DX thing I could say that I've seen.
Like, look, for my experience with that movie, which is a while ago now, when the helicarrier takes off and the seats go up, cool. every fucking punch the seat moves, that's fucking stupid.
Yeah, they have these pressure like pucks in the back. So yeah. Like, my first time was like John Wick 3, and yeah. Every time someone got punched and stabbed in the back, I'm like, no, the fuck, man.
I'm good. I'd be annoyed as fuck. It's so good,
bro. And like, fucking, I saw Poltergeist, the original Poltergeist in 40X.
Whoa.
And just the seat just vibrated for like an hour and a half because of the earthquakes.
Where's the closest 40X theater?
It's just, I think the only one's like Regal. Edwards. Mira Mesa.
Huh.
And then I saw fucking Gremlins, which was awesome.
I think we kind of have to watch Twisters in 40X.
I guess you're right.
We should do a field trip. It's so obnoxious. It's funny. Like, I'm like almost crying laughing every time I watch a movie in 40X.
Just a fucking tornado. You're like... I've seen
fast X in 40X.
Oh, boy. Yeah, all right. Well, that's Gente Under the Stairs.
Mm-hmm. And then we got some stuff coming up, which will... I know A Violent Nature is right around the corner.
Yeah. Oh, good.
You got a king
Jorge's
pick.
Favorite.
I'm stoked.
Atmospheric.
Oh, I love it.
High concept.
God, I can't wait.
Slasher film.
Can't wait.
We got a king pick. That's yeah, right.
He gave us an offering of two movies to pick from.
You know what? For our Patreon members and for the casual listener alike, this gentleman presented either The Editor, which I've heard things about, an Astron 6 joint.
Uh-huh.
Right? Or Olaf... Ittenbox, No Reason. And just based upon... I'm leaning towards The Editor.
Okay.
But that's just me. What is this No Reason movie? 4.3 out of 10.
Not good.
Doesn't fucking... obviously, that it's like, what does that have to do with anything? Well, you know, it's German. So that's a plus. Engulfed by anguish, trapped inside an allegory of torment and carnage, Jennifer's soul seeks the path of awareness and enlightenment. So The Editor it is. What? What do you think? What do you guys? Let's weigh in.
I've heard about The Editor, and I've heard fun things about it.
I have no opinion either way.
What was Astron 6? That's the production company, right?
Yeah, Astron 6. They also did, I Don't Want to Misspeak. Right, and I know
I don't want to miss a thing.
They always have like crazy ass posters for their movies. I think
it's a Canadian film company, and a filmography includes Father's Day, which we fucking super dig.
Yeah,
The Void. Yep, it is those guys. Psycho Gorman. I'm fucking totally down for down.
Oh, The Editor, the dad from Psycho Gorman is in The Editor, I believe.
I believe you are correct.
Yeah, that's where I've heard that film.
Yeah. So that's the next king pick.
I'm down for that.
And
all right.
Thanks for listening.
That's the Goozer Podcast for episode 416. This is Jorge signing out.
This is Jacob.
This is Ree.
Bye, idiots.
Bye, Sophia.
I'm not going to worry wrinkles in my brow. Nothing's ever going to be all right, no how. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world.